Hey folks, in this interview, I'm sitting down with Adobe's Josh Haftel. He's the guy that's in charge of mobile stuff over at Adobe.
This is TWIP.
Hey, welcome back to another episode of TWIP. I'm sitting down with Mr. Josh Haftel. He's the guy that is probably with you in your pocket most of the time as you carry around your mobile devices and use like Remobile and those sorts of apps to get your creative life done. Josh is going to dive into some tips and tricks on ways that we as just normal people can use Lightroom and the whole Lightroom ecosystem to make our creative lives a little bit more fluid. Josh, welcome to the show, man. How's it going?
Hey, thanks a lot for having me back, Frederick. It's really great to be here.
It is great to have you. It's always an honor to have you on because you're like literally sitting in the middle of the hornet's nest in terms of millions of people's lives and how they manage their sort of digital assets going forward. So always a treat to put you in front of the TWIP audience. Before we do that and dive in, you and I were talking in the quote virtual green room a little bit before we started this. Next week, you are going to go climb Mount Kilimanjaro. Right.
So that's right.
Tell me about that. Like, what, why, and what are you going to do there? Is it for work? Are you gathering assets for a future version of Lightroom demos? Like, what's going on?
Well, obviously, always. I always am capturing photos. Like, every trip I go on is with the major goal of capturing lots and lots of photos because I love taking pictures. My partner was the primary driver of it. She was really interested in doing Kilimanjaro for a while and just figured, hey, why not now? Now is as good a time as any, and yeah. It's a good season to go over there, and we were going to take this opportunity. We've done lots of international trips together. We've never gone to Africa. I've never been to Africa at all, and so this will be my first trip to Africa. We're going to also go see the mountain gorillas, so it's just it's an exciting time to go and visit a new continent, a couple new countries, opportunity to do something that's challenging. I heard that Kilimanjaro in and of itself is not particularly challenging from a kind of effort perspective, but from the high altitude, it can be challenging. So it'll be a first for a lot of the little things, and definitely am looking forward to taking a lot of photos. We're going to be summiting on Christmas Day, so I've got a Santa hat to bring along with me. I'll be a Santa Jew on the way up there, which would be fun.
That's cool.
And then it'll also be fun. Like, it's going to be like the full moon also, so I'm bringing tripods and lots of kind of stuff to take some, hopefully some full moon portraits. I did that once when I went to see Mount Bromo. Uh-huh. Which was a lot of fun to get some like late night celestial photography illuminated by the full moon. And I recently got myself a book all about full moon portraits or landscapes, I should say. Yeah. That is inspiration. So I'm excited.
Cool.
I'm really excited to go out there and take some pictures and have some fun.
That's cool. You know what? I wonder if Mount Kilimanjaro has internet access or cell access up there. Because if so, you could do a live stream from up there, you know.
True. It's funny. Like, I think they do. I remember reading some comments from other trekkers that went up there, and they said that surprisingly there was cell service, at least for part of it. I don't know up until what part or the entirety. I have no idea. But I know that also when I was hanging out with somebody recently, drawing a blank as to who it was, unfortunately, they had just received a clip from one of their videographers who was flying a drone at like 30,000 feet or 20 something thousand feet in the Himalayas, like recording like Mount Everest from up above. And they had just like captured it, and the person just sent it to them. Like, all it just technology is all amazing. It's so cool. And it's also a little bit disconcerting. I remember the first time I had that feeling, I was trekking through Myanmar, and I'm thinking in my head, you know, Myanmar, this is like one of those places where, because of a lot of things, unfortunately, partly the regime that they have over there, but there's a lot of this feeling of it being unspoiled by technology, so to speak.
Right.
And yet I had internet access throughout the entire country. And you're like, well, if it's everywhere here, give up. Like, where are you going to get disconnected anymore? It's like
ocean.
I guess maybe
somewhere in the middle of the ocean or the Bermuda Triangle, maybe.
Antarctica. I have no idea. But even down there, the penguins probably got their own little like satellite uplink receivers
or satellite phones or whatever. For better or for worse, the planet is connected, right?
Yeah.
So let's switch gears and talk about the topic du jour, and that's Lightroom Mobile and the ecosystem. So and there's a couple of directions I want to take the conversation in. The first one is I want to have you sort of set the stage for define the ecosystem, right? The different suite of apps that are available or different apps that are available for people, and how those connect to the cloud, and what are the benefits of using that stuff versus piecing together, you know, one of the other sort of apps that you can get, or all these other apps that you can get from the App Store or Android Store to sort of push your life forward digitally.
Wow, that's a broad question.
It is. You want me to? I can focus it down a little bit.
No.
Who's the ecosystem for?
Yeah, exactly. Well, I can answer it. As we go through this conversation, I'm sure that you'll help guide me back on track again if I go too far.
You know how I do it, man. You know how I roll.
The way that I perceive that question is like there are many different tools out there that you can use. And some of these tools are focused and specific to photography. Some of them are broad. I mean, there are obviously tools like Google Drive and Dropbox that people are using to store their images. And we have lots of customers who are using those. And there's also things like iCloud and Google Photos that store and transfer photos back and forth. And then there's also like Lightroom. And Lightroom has Lightroom CC as it product in the ecosystem is focused on being this centralized repository specific to photography.
Yeah.
So there are certainly, or I should say, there's no one or right way of doing things. And there's different pros and cons to each one of them. We've been building Lightroom CC to act as the centralized experience for your photography and focused on people who are passionate about photography. What we're not trying to do is we're not trying to replace Google Photos or Facebook for people who are just looking for snapshots.
Yeah.
Those are free products. And it's really, really hard to compete with free. And we're not even trying to. And our goal is to say, what we've done as Adobe over the years, especially in the Creative Cloud, is focus on ways of empowering creatives to do more with their images or creativity. Obviously, it's not just imagery that Adobe does. We have video products and we have type products and illustrations and so on. But if I think purely inside of the photography world, what can we do to make people's lives better as it relates to photography?
Yeah.
Clearly, that means editing tools, and there's also some organizational tools. The point that we were talking about before in the green room, and also you're kind of hinting at right now, is the fact that there's just a preponderance of images, of data, of devices. Like as we move, as we grow, as just kind of technology-enabled people, we've got, I always think it's funny, like I'm sitting at my desk and I, as a product manager, have to have many different kinds of mobile devices and phones, just to try them out, and like be able to be like capable of understanding how these different devices work. But, and I'm a little bit unique in that, but I don't think it's that unique to imagine that many people have both a computer and a phone.
Mm-hmm.
And there's even people who have a computer, a phone, and a tablet. Or a computer, phone, tablet, and laptop. There's just a wide number of different kinds of combinations of all of these different devices that fit into your life that either serve a specific need or actually help you out.
Yeah.
And so one of the questions is really like, how do we enable you to have access to your imagery whenever you wherever you are? Because the reality is, and I think we're all suffering from the same thing, that the world is getting smaller and smaller, the connectivity is getting more and more, and that means that you're always on, but it means that you're like you're also your attention is like kind of subdivided, and your availability to do things, like I don't know how often I have an opportunity to sit down at my desk and work on my photography.
Yeah.
And sometimes I do, and I'm sitting at my iMac right here. This is my photography world, so to speak, that we're talking from right now.
Yeah.
But oftentimes I'm not at my desk when creativity strikes.
Yeah.
I might be out and about, I might be walking around, and then I have an idea. I'm like, oh my God, I have an idea. I want to take this one photo and I want to manipulate it in a certain way, or take a couple photos and put them together into like, I got an idea for a new book or a new like series or a new something or other. And I've got these photos that I want to do something with. the idea of having access to that wherever I am is really, really awesome.
Yeah.
And how do you do that? And that's what we've been trying to build, is that we're trying to build a tool, an ecosystem of products in Lightroom CC that's focused on not having to decide or wait, I should say, not having to wait until you get home to do that thing, and kind of like putting a little mental note and say like, oh, when I get home, take that one photo and edit that one way. It's like, no. I'm here right now, and I'm going to take my phone right here, my trusty little Pixel 3, and say like, okay, I'm going to edit that photo right now, and I'm done, right? And I don't have to worry about waiting until I get home to do that. I could actually do it right then and there. Or if I got my iPad with me, I could just pull it out of my bag and do the editing real quickly.
Yeah.
Or even like in a different way of thinking about it, like maybe, you know, I remember I have a roommate, my partner, but I used to live in a place with actual non-partner roommates.
Yeah.
And I would want to hang out with them, but I'd also want to work on my photos. And I felt like, wow, it's really rude to pull up my laptop and just put this kind of like thing in between me and my roommates while we're having a conversation on the couch, drinking our nightly glass of wine. But I bring out my iPad and I'm like editing, and it for some reason it feels less kind of rude and obtrusive.
Less of a wall, right? Less of a digital wall between you.
Like working on my iPad, having that conversation. It's just interesting to think about, like, we can start to have it all. It's kind of like having your cake and eating it too, right? Yeah. We're just like getting to that point now where I can have access to my photography wherever they are. It's always interconnected. The images are always available. I can start editing in one place and then come back to another place and finishing it up.
Yeah.
I have a conversation oftentimes with professional photographers, and then I say, oh man, why would I ever use a little screen like this to edit my photos? And they're like, okay, well, let's say like you had a choice between nothing and your phone, which would you choose? Would you like, and let's say that you're saying, oh yeah, but is this thing really color managed? And to some degree, I know a lot of the manufacturers are working really hard to make sure there's some kind of stability to the colors that are coming out. And if you looked at two iPhones in the past next to each other, you could see a lot of difference. And they look at two iPhones next to each other now, they're much more close together. And sure, that's not as precise as using your data color or your I was going to call it gray tag, Macbeth, but
yeah, the data color spider or whatever. Yeah.
It's just showing my age, calling them gray tag.
I remember that gray tag Macbeth, man.
Yeah. using X-Rite devices. Anyway, point is, yes, they're not that. And there are times in which, like, if you are somebody who's super focused on color specificity, yeah, you could go back to your home computer with that, you have your nice LaCie or ISO monitor or BenQ monitor that's well profiled, and you're going to use that. Sure, totally get it. But why not do like the 90% on the road when you have the free time, and then come home and finish it up? That's also a possibility. Anyway, point is, that we're now having opportunities for a lot more things to do, a lot more places, a lot more opportunities. And so Lightroom CC is trying to be that tool. And the long-winded answer to your question is, by having one tool that's dedicated and specialized, makes it a lot easier. So that you don't have to worry about, well, where's that photo there and where's that photo over there? And taking advantage of like the unique opportunities that Lightroom offers, which is, all of your files are in one place. All of the edits are applied non-destructively. So I can always go in and access and change anything I've done. And the fact that it's being able to do it on a full resolution file at any point, and being able to access things that I've done on my desktop on the road, these are all really, really amazing opportunities that gives you this capability to do things. And frankly, the fact that the same math or algorithms that are being applied on your desktop or applied on your mobile device is really, really fantastic.
That's what I was going to ask. I was going to ask that. Are you giving anything up by that? Because I was, you know, traditionally, like you said, you know, old school thinking is doing anything on a device that's not a proper, quote, computer, like a MacBook Pro or Windows machine or your iMac or whatever, is you're going to have a limited feature set, limited power, and the algorithms that you mentioned are going to be sort of dumbed down, watered down algorithms versus the high powered real math that a proper computer can do. Are you saying that's not the case, that the algorithms that I'm applying on my handheld computer are the same or similar to what I would get on a proper computer?
So they're 100% the same. So exactly the same. And the only difference between the mobile devices and the desktop devices is that well, there's a few differences, but from an algorithmic perspective, it's just that some of the tools aren't available on a mobile device that are available on a desktop device to adjust or modify, but they're there to process. So that means that everything that you've done to your image on your desktop or other, like your laptop, they're all going to be done. So if you export an image, you process an image, and you render that image out on your phone, everything is being taken into consideration. Now, the cool thing is, over the years, and we've gotten closer and closer and closer and closer to having like 100% feature parity between the mobile devices and the desktop devices. That means that you can now even do most of the things on your mobile devices. There's still a few things that you can't do. For example, you still cannot yet do panorama creation or HDR merging on your mobile devices. We have in Lightroom Classic introduced a new tool called like the color range masking or luminance range masking. That functionality does not yet exist on the mobile devices yet. These are all things that we're working on, and they're all things that'll be coming at some point. But other than that, like all the other tools exist. So everything that you would have done on your desktop, you have access to. I mean, there's the selective tools, the gradient tools, the healing tools, all the different sliders, all the different options that you have inside of there. They're all available on the mobile devices. And this gives you the access to being able to do all the things without having to compromise. And in fact, the biggest difference, and what I was thinking about, like when I was saying, oh, what's the biggest thing you're giving up? Usually it's just like the screen size is that thing that you're giving up a little bit of. And sure, looking at a smaller screen sometimes can be frustrating. You want to see it big, you want to see it loud and
You zoom in
powerful
and
and
see
proud.
hairs and stuff, yeah.
Well, you can definitely do that. You can zoom in to your heart's content, like every resolution is possible. I have a couple hundred megapixel panoramas that I can load on my phone and zoom in all the way to the pixel level details. So there's nothing that's about that. It's just really just about looking at this on this little screen. Oh, you can't really see because it's black on black. There you go. Looking on this little screen, like it's a photo there, but sure. And that's where tablets are really an interesting kind of in between. And it's kind of an interesting conversation that we're having right now. Like, is a tablet a big phone, a small desktop, a desktop replacement? And there's a lot of conversations, a lot of opinions out there. We can see like Microsoft with their Surface Book are going one way, and Google with their Pixel Books are going one way, and Chromebooks, and then Apple with their iPads are going one way. And they're all trying to converge and figure out, well, what's that magical, perfect, like singularity of like all you need is this one device.
Yeah, I wonder if it's an or though. I wonder if it's a case of all you need is one device. Or it's like saying all you need is one vehicle. Well, really, we need cars, we need trains, we need planes, we need motorcycles occasionally, we need our feet, right? So,
Well, this is where it gets into like the opportunity for doing these like transformers, right? So if you look at Samsung has a thing called the DEX mode. DEX mode. I don't know how they pronounce it, if it's either spelled out or just said as an acronym. I have no idea. But what I think it's DEX. What DEX mode is it's basically you take your device, and you plug it into a dock, and that dock is connected to a keyboard, mouse, monitor, and it turns your phone into a computer. And you think about it, like these devices are like full resolution. They're 2K devices, 2560 resolution. So it's not different. They're not 4K yet. So it's not, but otherwise, like you can run a really high resolution monitor, typical resolution monitor these days, since maybe 8K is high resolution. Anyway, you can run a regular resolution monitor. You can actually get access to things. And the Android operating system and Chrome OS has been doing a lot of stuff where you can actually do things like in a real desktop-like environment. You have access to a mouse, and you have access to all these other things, and it feels like a desktop. And so like that's kind of like one idea of the future. Now you've also seen that Samsung has this new F type or F series. I can't remember, the Galaxy F. F as in Frank. Because like F and S sound too similar. They could have come up with a better name for these things. Come on, guys, think about this. But anyway, the Galaxy F is now one of these like foldable things where it's like it's all one device, and you open it up, and now you have like a bigger monitor. And you can imagine like other technologies would be like you could like I think LG at one point was showing off this like kind of scroll-like screen where kind of like it unfolds, so it like shrinks down to a small thing, because like if you can fit it in your pocket, that's what you need, but then it grows bigger. Like these ideas of being able to have your cake and eat it too, maybe hopefully technology will get to that point where you don't need multiple devices, you don't need all these different things. We're not there yet. I agree with you. And what I was going to say is, like, to me, my iPad that I use a lot, it's now become my primary photo editing tool,
Same here.
period. More than anything else, I love working on my phones because my phones are with me all the time. And I find, like, there's a huge number or percentage of my photography engagement happens on my phone just because it's there with me at any one point. It's like it's I can access it, I have an idea, I just bring it out. Now, when I get into that kind of like photography mode, like when I'm going to my trip coming up next week, I'll be bringing only my iPad with me, and I'll be importing the images directly using one of these guys. Yeah, I just had it right next to me, you know, one of these little guys over here,
Oh,
the
yeah.
USB-C SD card reader, bloop, bloop, you
Yep.
know. This is the SanDisk one. It's the one that I use, and
Oh, I
I
need to buy
just,
that.
you know, I do one of these little guys. I plug it in, and I, you know, here's my SD card. Like, I literally have been like setting up next to me all of my camera gear, getting ready for the trip. There's, I just had a slight update to my A7R III, yada yada yada. It's like the little toys to my right. I love them. But the point is, like, I'll be bringing these things with me. I'll take the images right out of my camera, plug it right into the SD card, plug that right into the iPad, bring the images over, open them up to Lightroom. When there's internet, it'll synchronize with the cloud. When there's not internet, it'll stay local on my iPad. I can do the editing, organizing, rating, flagging, changing file like titles and captions and all that kind of stuff. I can do it all on my iPad. And then as soon as there's internet, it syncs up to the cloud. You have access to those images and everything that I've done whenever I've had time. There's going to be plenty of time. I mean, I don't know if you're aware, but Africa is big
I
and
heard a
things are
rumor.
far away. Yeah, you heard a rumor and things from one place to the other, it takes a long time, you know. So there's going to be a lot of downtime. I'll be in jeeps and cars and buses and trains and planes and all the different modes of transportation for many time for oh, many time. I'm really good at the English today. A lot of time, and I'll be going through and have plenty of time to like, hey, I went out to see these gorillas. Let's see what like what did I get, and did I get some good photos in there, and what would happen if I edit it? And I'll be sitting there with my iPad and like accessing the full resolution files. Like it's the future,
That
man.
is the future. And the one thing that hit me was, like, as you're talking, was the idea of being able to, like you were saying, you can import images either into your phone or into the iPad and edit, right? And get a little bit of the editing done, and probably more so on the iPad, you know, with the stylus and all that. And when you come back into internet access, and you're and then Lightroom sees that, oh, I'm connected to the world again. It will just do the right thing and shoot all the files up and all the changes and all that. And then those come back down to your Mac there when you turn it back on, and to your phone and all that stuff. So you don't have to do anything except, hey, I shot a photo on my phone and I edited it. Now it's going to be on your Mac at home when you get back home, and on your tablet when you get to the hotel and all that, correct?
And what yeah, exactly? And what's really fun also is that I can also use and take advantage of because all these things are in the cloud. One of the other options and one of the other surfaces that we have is Lightroom.adobe.com. We call it Lightroom Web, Lightroom on the Web. There's lots of different names for it, but I just refer to it as Lightroom.adobe.com because that's like the portal that you go to. And what I can do is I can share because the images are in the cloud and because we have Lightroom.adobe.com, I can actually just turn on if I want people to see those albums, and I can even say, I want to share this. I made this album called Kilimanjaro, and I want to show other people all the photos in Kilimanjaro that I've rated as like 5 stars. And so I turn on share only 5-star images and let people download them or not download them. And then I can send those photos to my friends, my family, my parents, and they get a high quality, high resolution version of my images that are as always up to date. If I edit something, those edits like immediately synchronize into that thing. So like if I go in there and I'm like playing around with something and I see like, oh shoot, there was a little bit of a person's hand got in the way of this one shooting. I've seen like the behind the scenes of like these the gorilla trekking in which you got like 10 photographers around, and you can imagine every once in a while somebody's elbow gets in the way. I can just like and I share that image out, and then I see it later on. I'm like, oh crud, there's an elbow in the way. I can go open up the healing tool, heal that elbow out, and then I don't have to worry about republishing it. It's automatically shared with whomever I shared with, automatically gets the retouched version of that image. So like this gives me that opportunity to like just edit and not have to worry, and it's
That's
just
awesome.
all taken care of, and it's really
How
magical. So
instantaneous is that, though? You know, if I'm editing, if you're doing that and you want to heal someone's elbow out of a shot, and you've shared that album with me, and I'm looking at that shot with the elbow in it, and you edit it out while you're somewhere in Africa. Will it disappear on my screen, or do I have to reload it? How quick does that happen?
So if as long as I have internet, it'll happen. It takes about like 30 seconds, because all we're doing at that point is just changing the metadata. You know, like the healing is just some instructions, some numbers, some text that's going up. Yeah. And it's not like we're not uploading an image all over again. Yeah. So every time you make a change, all we're doing is we're changing like the instructions. And so, cause like that original file is already in the cloud, and we're just telling you, all right, now heal out this elbow over there. And so if you're looking at that image, it won't just happen. Like, if you're actively looking at the image, you will have to reload it. Okay. But if you're inside of the album and you're just kind of like scrolling through, it will automatically affix by the time that you've like gotten to that other image. Yeah. And so like, then you don't have to worry about it. So yeah,
that's cool.
It's pretty neat.
That is so cool. So looking at it, so there's a couple of lenses that you can look at this through, pun intended. So there's a whole idea of the world traveler, cool dude going to, you know, going with your partner, walking up Kilimanjaro, taking shots, traveling, bouncing around Africa. And that's a perfect use case for, okay, I'm going to share this album with my friends and family. My parents want to see this one. And, you know, this is for my social community. I only want them to see this one because I don't know any of those people. Right. So, but what about the pros, like the pro photographers that have the needs of, you know, they're you as well, right? So when they take their cape off, they're Josh, and they're running around the planet, and they're taking photos, they got kids and all this stuff. But when the cape is on, now they're shooting for clients, you know, they need to prove stuff for clients, they need to share, they have different, there's a different use case. What's the workflow for those guys? Is it Lightroom CC? Is it Lightroom Classic? You know, where does your mind fall on that?
Yeah, I mean, it definitely depends on their needs. So we're not building Lightroom CC or Lightroom Classic differently for one group of people or another based off of their livelihood. Mm-hmm. It's based off of their needs. Okay. So there's certainly photographers for whom Lightroom Classic is a better option. And that's why we have these two options. We're not replacing Lightroom Classic. We're not getting rid of Lightroom Classic. Lightroom Classic has its own capabilities. And it's a single computer oriented, like you want to organize your photos, you have all of your images organized over there in your own NAS or RAID or whatever, and you just want to organize and you want to have the folders and have complete access to them. They're all local and right there, but great. Lightroom CC, on the other hand, the images are all in the cloud. So for some people, if they're shooting like a huge number of images, you know, I talked to some people who shoot like 10 terabytes of photos a year. Mm-hmm. For them, it's going to be really hard to use Lightroom CC because that means that they're going to constantly uploading their images and they're going to be constantly like worrying about like space and storage. And there's unfortunately not a larger than 10 terabyte option that you can purchase with Lightroom CC. So for them, after 1 year, their online storage is full. Yeah. And of course, we're constantly revisiting that.
Sure.
There's lots of professional photographers who are also working with clients who are using Lightroom CC though. And in fact, we're even working on and we'll be releasing pretty soon a new technology preview for client proofing, online proofing mechanisms that you can use within Lightroom CC. Mm-hmm. And what would happen is like it gives you an option to take your images and add them into an album, share the album with a client and say, hey, pick 10 photos. And the client then goes in there and they say, that one, that one, that one, that one. If I take 11 photos, it says, wait a second, you can only pick 10.
Oh, that'd be killer. Yeah.
Pick which one that you want to get rid of before you go forward. And then you hit the done button and the photographer gets emailed like, hey, your client has picked their 10 favorite photos. Then the photographer can go in there and say like, okay, that photo, I got it. I'm going to edit only those 10 photos and then have that conversation. And it's all together inside of the application. We're releasing it as a technology preview to get some feedback.
Sure.
Because one of the things that I absolutely love about working at Adobe is we don't try and make things for photographers, we make them with photographers. Mm-hmm. So we're constantly soliciting feedback. We're constantly working with a wide number of different photographers and using things like technology preview where people have access to seeing things before they're kind of completely baked and having an insight and input into what they would want differently to working together with a very large pre-release community that we do like basically it's beta testers. Sure. And working with people all over the place. So it just gives us an opportunity to actually try it out and see, hey, what could be the best experience for you so that we're not building something and telling you, yeah, this is what you want.
Yeah.
We're like, no. Does this work? Does it not work? What do you want differently? It's a lot of fun.
Yeah. We know a lot of software companies do that, right? You're like, you know, they they will purport that they're smarter than you, you know, and they probably are, but they will give you a set of features that you may want 50% of those features. I think, kudos. I think it's a much smarter strategy to ask the crowd what they want and then overlay that on your budget and capabilities and then produce something that's more in line with what we want. So what, you know, getting into the differences between Lightroom Classic and CC, what am I giving up? Like as a pro photographer's watching this and they're in Lightroom, they're using Lightroom Classic and they're like, you know what? That actually sounds really good to have, you know, everything up in the cloud and then I can pull things down on my devices, et cetera, et cetera. What do I give up? You know, if I decide I want to move over there, or is it an or? Can I use both together, right? Can I use Lightroom Classic and CC for my sort of ethereal traveling the world type stuff?
Yeah, so I'll answer the first question first and the second question second. Okay. I was just thinking about what the order of operations is.
It's
always fun. Like you can see the gears turning.
I know. And I'm excited about this, so I'm just hitting you with a million things. I know.
Oh, please. Ask away. That's what I'm here for. So the main thing that you're giving up, there's a couple of different at the first level, it's like I mentioned earlier, they're very different in the one case that with Lightroom Classic, you store all your photos on your local machine. We call it like the truth is on the computer or truth is in the cloud, right? Yeah. The idea that where is that original photo and what's the most important one? So in Lightroom Classic, the most important original photo is on your desktop. If you delete that photo off your desktop, it's gone.
Yeah.
Like done. In Lightroom CC, if you delete it off the cloud, it's done. And that's kind of like the main difference.
Oh, okay.
So like that's kind of like one of the main things that's different between the two of them. So how that kind of like boils down into like what, you know, the question could be like, and so what? What does it matter to me? There are individuals and there are photographers who feel like, you know what? I don't trust anybody else with my photos. This is my bread and butter. This is the stuff that's the most important thing for me. I need to have control over it. So for them, they want to like have absolute infinite control over, here's all my photos, here's how they store it. I put them over here. I make, you know, the 3-2-1 rule of like three copies of every photo, two locations, one of which off-site.
Yep.
You know, like that very, very important 3-2-1 rule. You know, whenever I read about people who lose their photos, and they're like, you didn't follow 3-2-1, did you?
Yeah, which there have been a lot of in California over the past couple of months, right?
So. Well, not just in California. There's lots of places all over the place. Anyway, it's an unfortunate situation when you lose your photos. I do not want to make light of it. I do want to say that there are strategies in place. Just look up 3-2-1 and photo backup as to try and realize that there's no such thing as a perfect foolproof hard drive storage solution, and you need to have redundancy. Okay, that kind of PSA aside, there are some individuals that really want to have the nth degree of control over it, and that's one of the benefits from Lightroom Classic is like you have 100% ownership over which services that you want to back your images up on, how you want to off-site them, how you want to make them available for yourself and have redundancy available in a variety of different places. Lightroom CC takes more control over that, more ownership over that. So we do have an option where inside of Lightroom CC, you can say, check this box inside of the preferences, store all of these originals on this device. So for example, if you have your home computer and your home computer is connected to a RAID or a NAS or whatever you like other service that you want to have, for example, I've got a little G drive NAS next to my computer. Yep. And I use that as an option because again, I'm one of those photographers that feels like, hey, I don't make my money off these photos, but that's very important to me.
Yeah.
Like my photos they're incredibly important to me as a person, as a photographer, as a whatever you want to call it. They represent memories, that represent a lot of energy, a lot of intention, a lot of all this other kind of stuff. And so for me, it's very important. So even though I'm using Lightroom CC, I still say on my home computer, store all of these originals offline. I point them to my NAS. They're available there. My NAS is pointed to Backblaze. So I have my images stored up on my NAS as well as in Backblaze. And I also have them, obviously, because they're in Lightroom CC. Lightroom CC has them offline as well, stored inside of Amazon Web Services. Yeah. Well, there's always, you know, we could find ways for even those solutions breaking down. But regardless, that's my way of giving myself a little bit of kind of like, hey, I've been doing this a long time. It's important to me. It's important enough for me to spend all of my time. I mean, I have a degree in photography, so that was a bunch of time and energy. And then there's like all these years of photography. So like, if it's important enough to me, it's important enough to safeguard the future of my photos, not because I think that they're going to be valuable in the future.
Yeah.
I don't think anybody.
They're bookmarks from your life, right?
Exactly. I don't think anybody's going to care about my photos moving forward, just to be clear. However, they're important to me. So Okay. Point is, getting back to your original question, because I love going on tangents.
I love it. That's why I love talking to you. This is great.
But yeah, getting into it, like Lightroom Classic, you have more control over it, Lightroom CC, while you still have some control over it, there's still some of this that's being organized and controlled for you.
Yeah.
Another part of things that you would like, quote unquote, give up if you were to go from Lightroom Classic to Lightroom CC, there's a couple of like organizational tools in Lightroom Classic that don't exist in Lightroom CC. For example, there's no color ratings inside of Lightroom CC. So if you are really into the color rating system, and that's not to say that there will never be color ratings or something like color ratings,
yeah.
But right now that doesn't exist inside of Lightroom CC. There's a couple of things, like I think hierarchical keywords don't exist inside of Lightroom CC, and a hierarchical keyword is, if I want a way of saying, like use the word bug as a keyword, mm-hmm. It could be like Volkswagen bug or insect bug.
Or Africa, Kilimanjaro, right?
Right. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So like there are these like hierarchical keywords inside of Lightroom CC. The idea is that you would have those two together and you would search for both together versus inside of Lightroom Classic, you could, if you're like super, super organized and you create all these hierarchical keywords, you might go in there and say, no. I mean, this is Kilimanjaro, the country in Africa versus Kilimanjaro. I'm sure that there's a restaurant called Kilimanjaro somewhere, right? And you could be like, well, which Kilimanjaro are you talking about?
Yeah.
And you can use the hierarchical keywords that exist inside Lightroom Classic to do that. Now, if you're anything like me, I've tried and failed to use keywords my entire life.
I'm exactly like you.
I am terrible. I am absolutely terrible at keywording. I have met amazing people at keywording, and I'm like, bless you. You are awesome. It's just not me.
Yeah.
For me, like the auto keywording inside of Lightroom CC is so useful. So anyway.
Yeah.
So
I want to talk about that a little bit too, but continue.
We'll get there.
Yeah.
And so like, and there's also a couple of features that don't exist yet in Lightroom CC that Lightroom Classic has. So for example, the ability to create panoramas, the ability to create and merge HDRs, the color range, luminosity range, masking tool. These are all three kinds of tools that are in Lightroom Classic that don't exist inside of Lightroom CC. I'm trying to think if there's anything else. There's like a really basic video editing tool set inside of Lightroom Classic that doesn't exist inside of Lightroom CC. Again, the fact that it doesn't exist today does not mean that it will not exist in the future.
Sure.
It's just that that's where it is today. Whatever today's date it is, it's the December 7th, 2018 at 1:19 p.m.
Yeah.
it doesn't exist today.
Right.
But that doesn't mean that it won't exist in the future. But point is that you're asking what do we give up today? And then there's probably something else, and you'll probably get some hate mail, like, you didn't think about blah. And I'm like, yeah.
Yeah.
Sorry.
There's always. I mean, there's a million different use cases that people could go down. You know, with this. So, go ahead, Josh.
I was going to say, if you flip it around, you say, like, well, what do you get by going to Lightroom CC? Because you're asking, what do you miss if you go to Lightroom CC? If I flip it around, you know, because my job as a product manager is to talk about the positives, not just the negatives.
Exactly. Right? It's so one inch thin. Yeah.
Positive side. Exactly. You do get things, though, which is, sorry, the dialogue just popped up in front of your face. It was very stupid dialogue. There are things you do get in Lightroom CC. So we talked about one of those. That's like the in Lightroom CC, because all the images are in the cloud, and we have Adobe Sensei technology. Adobe Sensei, one of the things that Adobe Sensei technology, and Adobe Sensei is just kind of like a kind of umbrella brand for machine learning, artificial intelligence that Adobe has created specifically to make photographers' lives and creatives' lives better.
Yeah.
So Adobe Sensei powered I don't know, there was probably a term for it, or I don't know, a correction name for this thing. But basically our auto tag. So it analyzes images and identifies, oh, there's a high likelihood that there's a person in here, a dog in here, there's sky. We even use can apply happy and sad and all the other kind of tags that you can search for. And it's kind of fun to see what it comes back with. Of course, it's not perfect and it's getting better and better over the time. But it makes, for me, it's like, I either had zero tags or I have all these auto tags, which was really great. And the auto tags work really, really well. So that's one thing. And there's other technologies that we're working on that leverage this kind of ability to use the benefit of the images being in the cloud. And so if you think about it, machine learning is really, really interesting. Computational photography, all these things, it's kind of very interesting, kind of the super high mind share concepts and the terminology these days. We can leverage the fact that these images in the cloud, we have access to these really powerful servers.
Yeah.
So machine learning, one thing that's interesting about machine learning is machine learning works by training this neural net. Basically what it is you give it lots and lots of these examples and you say, oh, with this kind of thing, do this kind of thing for it. But in order to do that, it has to create this library, this kind of database file to say oh, we now know more and more about this. So the more complex it is, the larger that database file becomes, or that kind of library that we reference. And those libraries are huge, gigabytes huge. Yeah. So you can imagine downloading multiple gigabytes or many, many, many gigabytes files for everything you want to do, auto tagging or auto editing and blah, 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 all these things that we can do. You don't want to download them. So doing machine learning stuff in the cloud is actually really, really awesome. It gives you a lot of access to some really, really complex, advanced type of editing tool.
That wouldn't fit in the processor in a current phone, right?
You can leverage
these massive supercomputers in the sky to do magic and keywording and all that kind of stuff. Yeah,
exactly. So there's a lot of the stuff that you get by doing the stuff in the cloud. And then there's other things as well. Obviously the fact that you have your images, the full resolution files are in the cloud. Therefore you can get them full resolution on your devices and blah, blah, blah. So there's a lot of stuff that you get going on Lightroom CC. And so what we're trying to do is we're trying not to make it so that Lightroom CC, I've heard a lot of people say, oh, Lightroom CC is just a watered down version of Lightroom. It's not the case. If you look at the functionality, you look at the capabilities, yes, when it came out, a 1.0 product, correct, did not have all of the features of a 12-year-old product. That is just logic.
Yeah.
We weren't going to spend 12 years making a new version of Lightroom. We spent less time. We came up with a new one, and it was missing some features. The first version didn't have curves in it. And people were like, how did you release without curves? We're like, well, guess what? Within 2 months, we added curves into it. And then a couple months after that, we added other features. And it's just getting better and better over time. So it is not designed to be a watered down, simplified version. It's not Lightroom for dummies. Yeah. It is full featured Lightroom, and it's going to get better and better over time. So that the big difference that you'd have to choose is, do I want my images in the cloud or not? And that's going to be the decision. That's why it's not one is for professionals and one is not for professionals. It's one is for a certain kind of person and the other one's for a certain kind of person.
Yeah.
And so for me as a photographer, Lightroom CC is really, really awesome. And really, really works well. And to answer one final question, because I know you want to get a word in, you asked, can you use them both together, Lightroom CC and Lightroom Classic?
Yes, absolutely. Yeah, that's a big question.
Yeah, and so we get that question all the time. And there are, I hedge a little bit because we so the products, Lightroom Classic was never designed amongst the idea that the images are in the cloud. So things get a little weird when you use both of them at the same time. Mm-hmm. So it's better to choose and kind of fully commit to one or the other, but we definitely have people that try out both of them and see what's happening. And other people that might say all right, so for this kind of photography, I do Lightroom CC. And for this photography, I do Lightroom Classic. There are different ways of approaching it. And so generally speaking, we found that there can be some really weird things that happen, not necessarily because the products are incompatible with each other, but in just because of the way they're designed, the way you work with them, you might recognize this kind of weird, wait a second, I thought I edited the photo, but it's over there still. And it's not edited in the same way.
Yeah.
So just because they weren't designed to work, or Lightroom Classic was designed in a time mm-hmm. in which there wasn't cloud computing. There weren't, imagine Lightroom Classic came out before the iPhone.
That's crazy. Yeah.
Yeah, it's just it wasn't designed or built or architected in such a way to really design and think about what the world would be like in a world in which we've got these amazing supercomputers in our pockets.
Yeah, that's crazy. I mean, and, you know, in continuing that thought about, you know, the mobile and Lightroom Classic being designed before the iPhone came out, clearly iPhone's here, Huawei's here, Google's here with Pixel. We have these supercomputers in our pockets that we're walking around with. We have the horsepower, and you mentioned tablets as well. And I got to tell you, you know, I recently picked up the iPad Pro, and I got the Pencil, the Pencil version 2, and that guy, yeah. And I had the previous version. I love that so much. Yeah, I love that so much more than the previous version for a variety of reasons. But then it got me thinking, especially in advance.
No tip to lose.
Exactly. You're not going to break off. Don't even get me started on that design decision, Johnny Ive. But the whole idea of, like, being, it seems viable now to go with a mobile only workflow for you know, maybe not high end retouching billboards and Vogue magazine stuff, but maybe. But it just feels like I can get most of 90% of what I want done on a mobile, on a mobile device or a mobile device ecosystem. From your perspective, fast forwarding, is that where we're going? Are the computers that you and I are on right now the dinosaurs, and everyone's going to be on these super tablets that with pin and pressure sensitivity and, you know, LTE connectivity and all that stuff in the future?
Well, I definitely feel like there's a convergence happening, and I feel like we see, like, I just got one of those Pixelbook slates, or the Pixel slates, which is like the Chrome OS, and it has like its cover, its smart case has a trackpad in it. Which, when I remember reading a bunch of the kind of negative reviews on the iPad Pro, it's like, well, where's the mouse? I still want to use the mouse. There's still situations and environments in which a mouse is important. I don't think Apple are dumb. I think Apple is looking at, like, what's the right way? What's the feedback? And we'll see these things come together. And does it make sense? Can you, like, solve things? What I love about Apple as a company is they ask the hard questions. They say, like, well, do we really need one? And then, like, just really think about it and, like, not cave into, like, this customer request right away. But they usually turn around at some point and be like, actually, you know what? Yeah, people really do need that. And I don't know what the answer to the question of the mouse is. But in the end of the day, like, the question is, well, can we get things done without these big computers? Mm-hmm. And part of me feels like you were even mentioning this before, like, you sometimes need these different kinds of devices. You sometimes need a bike. Sometimes you need a car.
Yeah.
You know, what's the difference between a bike and a car? Well, they both get you from point A to point B, but a bike, you get exercise, you're sweating, you're like having fun, you're in the environment. You might be like, I don't generally drive when I don't have a car, but if I had a car, I wouldn't probably drive my car to the top of a mountain.
Yeah.
But I would ride my bike to the top of a mountain.
That's a very bad idea. Yeah.
It's just like, who cares? Like, it's like, all right, look at that. I just drove to the top of the mountain. Woo. Yeah. But whereas with the bike, I'm like, oh, this is fun. I'm kind of like connected to nature. So same kind of thing. Like, when I think about it from a computer perspective, do I think that it's going to completely replace? I don't know. We'll see. When I think about it, it's like my iMac that I'm sitting at right now, it to me represents my kind of like intention, not necessarily the tool as much as the intention. Like, I come into this computer knowing that I'm going to do nothing else but edit photos. Mm-hmm. That's what I'm going to do. When I'm on my iPad, I'm like 90%, maybe 80% going to edit photos, but I might open up Facebook every once in a while. I might open up Instagram every once in a while. I might, like, just doodle around on some other kind of games or whatever, like, or just poke around on the internet. When on my phone, it's like maybe 40% photography, right? So it's like the intention level goes down. And so, like, when I'm like super serious, I liken it a lot to, like, if you have, I live in San Francisco, so this is you see my entire apartment from this, like, view. It's like, boom, done, right?
Yeah.
It's like the kitchenette is just a little bit out of view, but it's like really, literally, that's it, right?
Yeah.
And it's a bajillion dollars a month. But in the reality, like, is if I had a larger space, I would love to have a studio that's completely, like, it's just, I go in there with the intention of just locking off the rest of the world and just focusing. My mother has her own, like, little studio. She does a lot of quilting and fabric arts projects, and she'll go, like, when she goes in her room, it's like, don't bug Ma. She's working on her arts.
Yeah.
And leave her alone. That's her happy space. That's, you know, That's her woman cave, right? So like she goes in there, just like, oh, done. And the same idea is like, that's what my iMac is to me. This is like when I'm being serious about it. And could this be replaced by a tablet or other thing? Sure, maybe. But it's also like, there's some kind of like value out of being like here and like dedicated to it. And it doesn't move around. And I kind of like, it forces me.
Yeah.
It's like puts like the little like blinders on, and I don't get distracted by the rest of the world because I'm like kind of in that little
it's a physicality, zone. Physicality of being sort of tied down to one location, one sort of purpose built location where you're going to get some serious work done versus, you know, scenery changing and being on a device that is that is built for multi-purposes, right? And doing many things.
To be fair, like I have done very serious work. I mean, serious, as serious as I ever get. And as you can tell, you look at me, I don't look very serious. Like I got weird colored hair all the time. Anyway, I've done very serious things on my iPad. I've worked on things. I've gone into publications and books and whatever, like on my iPad. It's not like I can't do those things.
Yeah.
But I just find that like, for me, like my desktop is that thing. So to answer your question, do I imagine these things could go away or converge? That's definitely a possibility.
Yeah.
But I also see an opportunity. You know, the same kind of conversation could be like, well, will my phone replace my digital SLR? And what we've seen is that you could take a lot of really amazing photos. This is a Pixel 3 again, has really amazing camera. Like it's all their technology that they have inside of here, like the new night sight mode that they have is amazing.
Yeah,
like it's really,
that.
Really cool stuff that they can do with it. Takes amazing photos, shoots in DNG, which is Adobe's RAW format. So you can capture a RAW photo inside of there, blah, blah, blah. It's an amazing capture device.
Damn.
When I break out my A7 R3 and pop all my 70-200 lens on there, like I'm in a different mindset.
Yeah.
It doesn't mean that the photos that I'm taking with my A7 R3 are better than the ones. They're different. And they're like the intentionality is different. So I think the same thing with editing devices is true.
Yeah, yeah. It doesn't have to be an or like we always say. Right, I want to wrap it up with a final question, sort of more future facing stuff. You mentioned Adobe Sensei and sort of the computational photography future and artificial intelligence and all that stuff. Where can things go with that beyond just character and object recognition for keywording in photos? I know you can't reveal where things are going to go from a corporate standpoint, but from a Josh standpoint, where would you like to see things go in terms of AI?
You're going to end on the question that's going to take me an hour to answer. Okay, I'll answer it quickly.
That's what I do.
Yeah, no worries, no worries. It's like you're going to the doctor and you're like, oh, one last thing, doc. I think that I have a tumor. Wow.
Exactly. Is my lung supposed to be hanging out?
But yeah, so I feel like, or what I hope, I should say, that we can get out of AI, machine learning, artificial intelligence, all that kind of stuff, computational photography, is ways to make photography, one, more accessible to more people. Because one of the things that I love about mobile devices and cameras is that in many parts of the world, this is the first computer/camera/everything that a lot of people have had. And the fact that it's not a kind of crappy second best, it's actually first class citizen and producing really amazing photos, means that people who didn't necessarily in the past have the means to go out there and buy a super expensive camera can now be part of the conversation, they can be a photographer.
Yep.
And it's like, that's amazing. And then, but there are certain physical limitations that exist in front of one of those devices. And how do we solve those for those physical limitations? Like, and portrait mode is a great example of solving for physical limitations and still getting the high quality results of the kind of the nice creamy bouquet in the background, blah, blah, blah. So that's one thing. So taking computer and artificial intelligence and all those things to solve for physical limitations that will empower more people to take photos. Another one of them is making things easier, and making things easier is good for anybody.
Yeah.
And I always find it funny when people are like, oh, that's just that auto thing is just for amateurs. Like, no, actually, it's for professionals, because guess what? Time is money for a professional. You know, there's an old saying that I'm going to butcher. You know, like artists talk of, or I should say, amateurs talk in terms of art, professionals talk in terms of money.
Yeah.
And so, like, the idea is, like, I just, I need to be, I need to be efficient. I need to be effective. I need to actually go out there and do the best thing I can do that upholds my brand. But at the same time, I got a wife, kids, family, friends, whatever. I got things that I want to do that's not just this. So, you know, I remember always going and when I would talk at my alma mater and I would have somebody come up to me and they would be like, I just did this photo. It took me 18 hours in Photoshop. I'm like, and you're going to be broke soon. So let's teach you how to do that faster.
Exactly. Right?
So artificial intelligence is something that can make things faster and easier. So obviously for a professional, it makes it faster. For somebody who's not that familiar with how to do the tools, it empowers them to be able to do something they couldn't have done otherwise. Yeah. And then the last thing is to do things you just can't do today. So like I think about HDR is a good example of that kind of artificial intelligence / computational photography. That before that, what would you do? Take three different shots of three different exposures, and then literally cut out different parts of it, and then stitch them together like in the dark room.
Yep.
And yes, again, before I get any hate mail, I understand that it, for all intents and purposes, the zone system from Ansel Adams and Minor White was kind of an early version of HDR.
Yeah.
But it wasn't like taking different shots and merging them together. And that's something that you can do in digital to get access to a wider range of exposures. And again, before I get into hate mail, you can do HDR that looks good. It doesn't have to look overprocessed
or crunchy, right?
your eyes bleed and crunchy and all that kind of stuff. Yes, yeah. I agree. But anyway, like that's a good example of like doing things you couldn't do otherwise. Yeah. Or we have a technology preview on iOS and Lightroom Mobile for the capture mode where it's long exposure, and it's using computational photography to do long exposure to be able to create long exposures without a tripod, because it's taking multiple frames and it's stabilizing them and then smoothing out the movement inside of them. You can actually, I've taken like 10 second exposures without a tripod, and it comes out tack sharp with the nice little flowing motion inside of there. And that's really cool, right? So we're now looking at, well, what could we do to do things you couldn't have done before? Depth is another example where we can actually start to differentiate one object from another based off of its like position in space from the camera, so that you can be able to say like, oh, select the object that's closest to the camera, which is the person, that's the subject, and like, don't select the background. And now I can just do things to the subject. You know, there's a lot of stuff that you can imagine happening and coming down the line that will make your life easier and get it to the point where I want to, as a photographer, do the fun things. I don't want to do the not fun things. Right. The keywording is an example of that. I don't want to keyword my images. Cool, technology, take care of that for me. I want to do the fun things. Like, I want to take that photo and I want to see, what's it going to look like in black and white? What is it going to look like in sepia? What is it going to look like in color? What is it going to look like in all these other ways of like having fun playing with my photos? That's what I like to do.
Yeah, and I wonder, you know, look, as we're talking about future-facing things and what might happen in the future, I always bring this up, especially if I'm talking to a camera manufacturer. It's like, why? I can't for the life of me understand why we're carrying around these super expensive camera bodies like your Sony or my Panasonic or whatever. They have processors in them. How I would love to see a future where, you know, a company like Adobe creates a camera that has that stuff built into it. Like, I want a camera that has all your crap in it, Josh, all the Lightroom Mobile stuff in the body, so that I can do the stuff that you're talking about, including the computational photography stuff, including tagging at the time of capture versus in quote post-processing. I want post-processing to be something Dad used to do.
Sure. Well, not all of that exists, but that exists. It's called the Zeiss ZX1.
Oh, wow.
It hasn't started shipping yet, but it comes preloaded with Lightroom inside of it.
Oh, crap. Okay.
You take photos with it. It's a really awesome camera. There's an edit button inside. You hit the edit button, Lightroom opens up. You're editing right on your camera. It's got Wi-Fi. It's got a hard drive. It gets all this kind of stuff. So, yes, the future is now, my friend.
I love it. I love it, man. Josh Haftel, man, thank you for coming on. You gotta be posting live from Kilimanjaro next week, man.
I'll try.
You have a public Instagram, right, where people can follow you?
Yeah.
What's your Instagram account?
Josh Haftel, just my name. Haftel.
There you go. See, you're smart. You can come up with something crazy. Yeah, I love that.
Nope. It's the same. Like my website, joshhaftel.com. Everything, just John, it makes it easy because I'm not that creative. Like, I'm the worst person when it comes to like writing the birthday cards, like coming up with something snappy and creative. Like, I come up with like happy birthday. Yeah. Like, that's the level of my creativity. Like,
That's me. That's me right there. We call that Occam's razor, man. Just, like, just get to it. Be done with it. All right, Josh. Well, thank you, man. Enjoy your weekend. Enjoy your trip to Africa. And looking forward to seeing lots of pictures from you.
Cool. Yeah.
Cool, man.
Thanks, dude.
All right. Take care. See you later.
This is Twip.